Kelly Vachon. Or as the French say, Vachon. This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vashon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vashon.
And welcome to the Brown Briefly podcast and weekly radio show here on the Voice of Vashon. We're located on the beautiful Vashon Island in Washington State. And that was the voice of Brian Brown, who's the creator of the Brown Briefly. Brian started the Briefly and brought to his high standards of intelligent discussion of current events laced with humor and empathy. Brian's motto was, less is more, more or less, and he always offered more. Brian was a great guy, by the way. I knew him very well. So, on our panel today, we're a little bit short on our panel today. We have our Defender of Justice, Mariner, Cyclist, Top Secret Engineer, Mr. Kevin Jones. He's zooming in from home, I guess. Kevin?
I'm at home zooming in and making room in the studio.
All right. We've got a full studio this morning. We're going to get to that in just a minute. So we have historian, a professional party animal. No, professor and party animal, not professional party animal. Well, it could be, I guess. Down under aficionado, Dr. Bruce Hallman. Good morning, Bruce.
Hey, good to be here.
Indeed. So our fairy maven, a part-time politico, full-time executive director of the Vashon household, and playwright, and full-time shenanigans coordinator, Amy had to leave. She had to go have an audit today with her her real job. So, and we're going to miss her. And also missing today is our legal eagle. He's a consensus builder, former Washington State Attorney General, and Fulbright scholar. Craig Bellis is down in New Mexico having fun. So I'm Truman O'Brien. I'm here sitting behind the big red switch at the Gene Bosch Broadcast Studio here in beautiful downtown Vashon. And we have with us today some fabulous guest. I can hardly wait. We have with us Jim Brown, who's the new general director of the Vashon Opera, and he's also the conductor and the stage director of Falstaff, which is just coming up. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
I'm glad that you're here. In fact, I'm thrilled that you're here. Also, we have Joshua Conyers, who's the baritone. He is Sir John Falstaff from the production.
Hello, good morning. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. It's delightful having you here.
I'm excited.
Well, good. Emily Pulley, mezzo-soprano, is Mistress Quickly.
That's right. I'm very happy to be here, and I've sung the role of Alice Ford, and so this is my first foray into Quickly, but our Alice is just tremendous. I'm so excited to hear her.
That is awesome. I just had no idea. And in fact, we have Marie Masters-Webb, soprano, who is Alice Ford.
Good morning. I think if we're going with the French pronunciation of Vachon, yeah, I'm going to go with the Italian pronunciation of my character's name and be known as Alice.
Alice. Oh, well, welcome. Thank you very much. I love it. Hey, before we jump into our show talking about the opera, we always take a moment to kind of check in with everybody about what special things they've experienced this week. So let's start with you, Bruce. What special things did you get into this week?
Well, Mother's Day weekend.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
very
yeah.
special. You know, we had all the kids and grandkids out, and it was just a good day. And on Friday, Vashona, a trawler got its bottom painted and was relaunched and back in the water. For opening day on Saturday.
I saw you coming in.
Did you?
Yeah, I was going out when you were coming in.
Right.
I'll tell that story when we're done.
Okay. So, a busy weekend, but a beautiful weekend.
All right. Kevin, how about you?
Well, let's see. We came in from boating from Bainbridge and saw the brand new bottom paint on Vashona, so up close and personal, since we are right next door. So nice work, Bruce. Fortunately, the wind was from the south, so we didn't any risk of putting a new dent in the boat.
Good.
It's easy docking when the wind's from the south. So other than Bainbridge, on Bainbridge, we were right at the city dock, which means you were right on the course where the Bainbridge Island Rowing Club goes by. So I had a chance to get out the comfy chair up on the top deck, binoculars, checking out, sort of canvassing all the Bainbridge rowers. Pretty awesome to see everybody out on the water. So that was a lot of fun. But also coming up, stuff we've been planning. So in case you're interested in being part of No Kings Day on the 14th of June, which is going to be a big national awareness raising about our current administration, you can join us on May 15th at the Haverah, 11:45 to 2 to make signs, and later at Backbone at the Sheffield Building Warehouse that Backbone's in at 6 p.m. on the 15th. And then we'll also be showing off some of that new protest gear on the 18th Day of Exile. We've been invited to join and raise awareness about those who have been disappearing from our country. So we understand that's at 11 o'clock. And you'll see us on First Friday on the 6th of June. So keep your eyes open. Join us, if you like, on the 15th. Get involved with the raising awareness. With Indivisible Vaginal.
And I was going to say, for our guest, in case you didn't know, Kevin is the president of Indivisible Vaginal, correct?
I'm
no
on the leadership team. Yeah, I
on
did
the leadership
create the organization.
Team. There you go.
Me and several colleagues tried to get into good trouble every once in a while.
Indeed, indeed. So, Jim, how about you? What's going on with you this week?
Well, I just closed another opera at the university where I teach, Pacific Lutheran University. My students performed Purcell's The Fairy Queen, which is a very different opera than Verdi's Falstaff, but there are fairies in Falstaff as well, so I guess that's the connection. And also, we had lots of fun launching our rehearsals for this upcoming production of Falstaff.
Great. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to hearing more about that, for sure. So, Joshua, how about you? Do you have anything interesting going on this week? Obviously.
Yeah, well, I'm a New York City boy, and so I'm a huge Knicks fan.
Oh, yeah.
So the Knicks are up 3-1 on the Boston Celtics.
All right.
So
all right.
I'm really happy about that. I mean, of course, besides being with all these lovely people and rehearsing, and we're just having so much fun, you know, laughing and giggling and doing our thing. So it's just been a joy to be back in Vachon. Oh, sorry, Vachon.
Vachon. Vachon. Yeah. That's correct. Emily.
I've just loved being here. I've been able to go on a hike every day since I've been here. And for this Texas girl, we don't get this kind of weather and these amazing trees. And I've just been enjoying how beautiful it is here. And, of course, enjoying my colleagues and working on this magnificent opera that notice more and more the longer you spend on it.
Well, you know, I had a friend from Spain who was here visiting, and I used to be a park commissioner. And so I took him around the island, showing him all the different parks. And finally he goes, Truman, why do you have parks? And I said, well, you know, I tried to explain public parks. But Truman, why do you have parks? I said, well, Charlie, I called him Charlie. Well, you know, I don't understand. He said, you live in a park.
That's true.
Oh, I see. Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, I agree with you. That's for sure.
And it was nice of y'all to, like, time all of the rhododendrons to be in bloom.
Yeah,
for my arrival. I really appreciate
that. Couldn't have been perfect. Timing more perfect. Maria, how about you?
Well, before we started our rehearsal process here on the island, I was able to spend a couple of days with my in-laws in Spanaway, Washington.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So
fantastic.
My husband is a hometown boy to this area, so was able to connect with family, which is always really special. And then rejuvenated by that experience, taking the ferry from Point Defiance to Vachon is always such a special experience. Some kind of magic just wafts through the air and lets you know you're about to come to a special place and experience something really phenomenal.
You know, I appreciate that very much because we're so jaded here on the island. You know, we're going on the darn ferries all the time, and all we see is the rawr, rawr, they're just not running on time. And, you know, so it's really nice to have that refreshing sound about, and it really is true, isn't it?
Yeah. I just think of it like a miniature cruise. It feels like vacation every time.
Yeah. Well, we usually sleep or read or, you know, something unless the orcas are out, and then of course they point those out to us, and that's always fun. Well, I'll have to tell you, I'll make my my time brief. So I saw you coming in as I went out, and I you know, I've had a bunch of work done on my boat, like since November it's been, and they put a new water heater in. And so as I tested it, the darn thing leaked, the connection leaked. So I took it back to work on them. Anyway, long story, spent all afternoon there supervising all the work because they had a few other things not exactly correct. I fueled up. Right at closing time, they closed, they went home. I left the dock. I got out in the middle of the sound, or in the middle of the channel, rotated the wheel to the right, and snap, it broke. So here I am with the rudder hard over to port with the incoming tide and the wind. And I thought, what am I going to do with this thing? Well, to make a long story short, after a couple of 360s, I finally made it over to the pier over on the west side there. And a gentleman was walking down the pier. I said, "Help, give me a hand." And he ran over and grabbed the bow. Anyway, saved the day. And good old vessel assist came and we tied up and got it back into the slip. But anyway, that was my excitement for the week.
An exciting day.
Yeah.
Isn't that how Gilligan's Island started out?
It's got 3-day cruise. Yeah, that's it. Exactly. Oh, man. All right. So, hey, today's a significant day, as are all. It is National Apple Pie Day. I had no idea about that. National Fruit Cocktail Day, Top Gun Day, and Tulip Day. We're almost too late for Tulip Day, aren't we?
Getting close.
I mean, they're getting close to being done up there. We've got some important birthdays. 1937, Arthur. 1939, Harvey Keitel. 1941, Richie Valens, you know, who was killed in the plane crash with the Big Bopper and Buddy Holly. 1950, Stevie Wonder. And 1964, Stephen Colbert. So there's some important birthdays today. Today in history, I'm going to do these fairly quickly because I want to get to the folks about the opera. But this is for you, Bruce. In 1607, the English colonists led by John Smith established... Oh, no, not, this is yours also, yeah. Mm-hmm. They established in Jamestown the first... Or it's actually the second landing near the James River in Virginia, the first permanent English settlement. But also, this one for you, in 1987, mm-hmm. first fleet headed by Arthur Phillips... A set sail with 11 ships of convicts for Botany Bay in Australia. Bay. There you go. Beginning of Australia.
Exactly.
That really isn't. And we had Aboriginal folks there for generations, but the first of us of our kind there. Huh?
First Europeans.
There you go. In 1913, I got a couple of air aviation stuff. 1913, the first four-engine aircraft built and flown by Igor Sikorsky of Russia. And just think about this now. The Wright brothers was in 1903, so this is only 10 years later. Mm-hmm. We got a four-engine airplane flying. I think that's pretty remarkable. And in 1916, the Lafayette Escadrille, the American Air Force unit formed under the French command, they completed their first fight there in the Battle of Verdun. In 1949, the first British-produced jet bomber, the Canberra. Now, again, 49 to 03. That's not very much time to have a jet airline or a jet bomber really flying. Pretty interesting. Let's see. Let me get on down here. Oh, okay. In 1995, Team New Zealand beats Team Dennis Connor 5-0 to win the America's Cup for the very first time. There you go. I thought you'd like that one. And last but not least, 2013, Canadian astronaut Commander Chris Hadfield completes his tour on the International Space Station. And if you're not familiar with him, he's the guy that did David Bowie's song Space Oddity. He actually did it in orbit.
Cool.
And played guitar, and there's a video of that that's really fascinating to see. Okay, so get rid of all that folly, Ron. Let's get down to something important here. So, but before we talk about the actual opera Falstaff, which is coming up here in, on not this weekend, but next weekend, we want to talk to our guests and learn a little bit about who they are really in real life. So, Jim, this is Jim Brown. He's the new executive director or the general manager.
General director, yeah.
General director. Okay. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little about your background. And Craig, when you ask him that, he says, "I was born 6 pounds, 7 ounces, so we don't need to go that far back."
Yeah, I won't go that far back. Yeah. But yeah, as I said, I'm a professor of music at Pacific Lutheran University, where I lead the voice program and direct the operas, along with a colleague of mine. Most of the time, he's on sabbatical, so I got to do that all by myself this time. So,
cool.
Yeah, and I'm originally from Louisiana, so I appreciated the Baton Rouge song leading into our show today. So, yeah.
Cool. All right, so let's go on around. How about you, Joshua? What's your background?
What's my background? So I was born, well, I was 8 pounds.
I believe that.
9 ounces, right? Yeah. No, but I'm originally from New York City, from the Bronx. Mm-hmm. And half of that, I moved to Virginia when I was 11. So I feel like a New York boy and a Southern boy all at the same time. I'm a professor as well, professor of music at the Eastman School of Music in Rochester, New York.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is awesome. Yeah. And, well, we'll get into more about, sure, about your character here in a minute. Yeah. Emily, how about you?
I'm originally from College Station, Texas.
Yep.
And I live
Is that home of Texas A&M?
Giga Maggie's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yep.
I thought so. Okay.
And I've been doing this, professionally since before some of the cast members were born. So I'm very happy to still be here. And I started off as a soprano, and now I'm singing mezzo-soprano and also getting to direct. So like on my Facebook profile, it says I play dress up and holler at people, and sometimes I get to boss them around as well. So I'm having a great time and just so happy to still be part of this business.
Oh, this is fabulous. Marie, how about you?
Well, I grew up in Akron, Ohio. Oh. We are known for the plant that makes Purell.
Oh.
We're also the hometown of LeBron James.
All right.
And that might be about all we're known for.
And you.
And me.
And
they also produced Marie Masters Webb.
That's great.
I'm a soprano, but when I sing in the shower, I'm a very low mezzo. Like Emily, those are all of my dream roles, I have to say.
Well, you know, Craig, our legal eagle, is also originally from Ohio. And I can't remember the... Do you remember? Aaliyah?
Elyria,
that's it. Thank you. That's where he's from originally. So there you go. He'll be disappointed that he wasn't here today. All right. So now that we know a little about who you really are, first of all, let me just say that Falstaff, of course, is a comic opera in three acts. And it's, of course, by the Italian composer Giuseppe Verdi. The Italian language libretto was adapted by Arrigo Boito and from the play, for those of you who are familiar, The Merry Wives of Windsor, and from scenes from parts 1 and 2 of Henry IV by Shakespeare. So, Jim, can you give us a little brief synopsis of the story? I mean, you don't want to give it away, but something about the play itself.
Do you want my poem?
I was going to ask. Emily wrote a poem about
when
this.
When I did this, last time I sang this, when I was singing Alice, I started to write a synopsis in poem form, and then I sort of painted myself into a corner because the rhyme scheme and was just too difficult. So anyway, but I got one verse, so this is the setup. John Falstaff, to free himself from fiscal fetters, commences to pen two identical letters to woo wealthy Windsor wives, gaining him entry to coffers with offers of making them gentry.
Oh, man, that is perfect. That is perfect.
I told Emily she set a high bar with that first stanza.
Boy, so, no kidding.
Which may explain why she has not finished
I have not
that
finished
poem.
It. But yeah. While I'm here on Vachon.
Well, yeah, possibly.
That is amazing. That is amazing. And you could not have made it more succinct or to the point. Mm-hmm. You know, that is excellent.
Basically, hilarity ensues.
There
yeah.
you go.
Yeah.
Well, so I know that the Vachon Opera presented Otello once before. And Jim, is there any particular reason that you know of why Vachon Opera chose another production of Shakespeare's?
Yes. I mean, you know, everyone loves a theme. And so this season has been the Viva Verdi season for us at Vachon Opera. And just like next season will be our fairy tale season in which we're going to do Cinderella and Hansel and Gretel in one season. So, So we look for themes and these are the last two operas of Verdi and both masterpieces in their own right, very different operas, but, you know, but both masterpieces. Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent.
So let me probe a little bit into the characters. We've learned a little bit about you, but tell us a little bit of how do you inhabit the character? How do you sort of become who this is? And let's start with you, Mistress Quickly.
Mistress right. Quickly. Well, Quickly was a very popular character in four of Shakespeare's mm-hmm. plays, mm-hmm. and she's sort of the go-between between the upper class and the lower class, and she knows how to get things done, and she loves a good joke, and she loves pulling one over on Falstaff, and she also loves her gal pals, the merry wives, so they call upon her to sort of set the plan in motion on how to get back at Falstaff, and it's great, great fun.
And Emily is hilarious in the role.
Thank you.
So, Sir John Falstaff, how do you inhabit a role like that?
Oh, wow.
Well, thoroughly. I can see it from here.
Well, listen, well, you know, well, when I first looked at the role and you kind of break it down and, you know, the one thing they say that this guy is bigger than life, right? Figuratively and literally, right? This is a big man. He talks about how he loves to eat and drink, very vain, you know, and I'm a big dude. I'm 6'4", 300 plus pounds, right, guy? Yeah. So, right? I was like, okay, boom.
We've got that.
I've got that down, you know? And, you know, he thinks a lot of himself and, you know, he thinks he's hot stuff. You know, he is a man of stature, but, you know, he likes to play a little dirty with his guy. So he likes to a little bit of stealing. He likes a little bit of mischief. He likes to have a lot of fun, and he likes to drink. So, you know, he's super fun guy to play. And just to kind of just be in that zone where I think, oh, I'm untouchable and everybody wants me. That's really fun to play.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I can imagine.
So it's a lot of fun. Okay. And working with the three of them is just incredible and amazing. Just the fun that we have in the rehearsal room is amazing. I'm just looking forward to the people of Vashon and everybody else who's out there to come and check this out. It's going to be fantastic.
Great.
I just want to comment that Josh, you know, and I have talked about the history of this role, and a lot of times you'll hear Falstaffs that really bellow the part out, and certainly there is a little bellowing that Josh is doing, but I have to say he sings it so beautifully and brings such a beautiful sound to it, and it's you strike the perfect balance between bellowing and gorgeous singing. So.
Great.
So is it Alicia?
Alicia. So, you know, I love to research the historical period of any opera that I'm doing and draw on those historical references for characters, but sometimes something much more personal presents itself, and that's what's happened for me with this production of Falstaff. When I found out that we're setting this in the 1970s, and when I saw myself in my costume, I realized I'm playing my grandmother.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, she immigrated from Italy to the United States. She had five children. She was a housewife. She cooked three meals a day. But she had such an incredible sense of fun that everyone remembers her for. And had this absurd sense of humor that she loved to bring out at sort of inappropriate times.
Yes.
And you know, she passed when I was quite young, but I have all of these memories of her personally and from my family members. So I think that's been what has infused this character the most for me thus far, that it really is a real person from my own life that I'm playing.
Oh, that's awesome. The, you know, I have to tell you, I've seen, you know, The Merry Wives of Windsor, many times, but we often go down to Ashland, Oregon for the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. And we were there when you're sitting in the very first row, and the gentleman playing Falstaff was excellent. And he came over to the edge of the stage, and he started clearing his throat. And we all went, uh-oh, this is bad. And he came right over to the edge of the stage and spit right off the stage. And we were all diving for cover, you know. And then he gave us all kind of a little wink, and you know? it was really delightful. But so I'm looking forward to seeing you, Joshua, being this character.
Don't get any ideas.
Yeah,
we have an orchestra pit.
There's an orchestra pit here. There's no spitting here. So, Bruce, go ahead.
Yeah, so, Verdi has, 26 operas? Mm. You know, only two are comedies. So how do you get your head around that sort of shift from dramatic to comedic roles, and how do you sort of prepare for that? And what does it do for you, Jim, as sort of director, and then you as actors? I mean, how do you make that shift?
Well, Verdi makes the shift for you. He constructed such a masterpiece in this regard that is such a kind of redemption story for him, because as you say, his only two comedies, his first comedy was, I don't know, his second opera, I think. And it was a complete flop because he had suffered a lot of personal tragedy while trying to write this comedy. And he admitted that, you know, he was sort of like, sorry, I just couldn't come up with a comedy here. Yeah. After a lifetime of writing masterpieces, he put this comedy together that is, it's all prescribed for you, really. You just kind of follow the libretto and follow the music, and it's just kind of a perfect blueprint.
Yeah. How about the rest of you? Is that difficult at all? Or,
well, Jim and I were talking. It's harder to do comedy than drama, just because it's the timing is. Thank God it's in the music, but. Also, thank God that you have this group of people to play along with, because you are absolutely, comedy doesn't exist in a vacuum. It just doesn't. Right. It's creating those situations and playing off of your scene partners. And to me, that's where the fun is, because, you know, you can look your fellow performer in the eye, and it's just a tennis match, and it's so much fun, and you build on what they do and they build on what you do, which happens in drama as well. But it's so essential to comedy to just have each other in your sights and just keep knocking the ball back and forth.
Perfect. Kevin.
So kind of along those lines, so you're not only all of you on stage, right, are interacting with each other, but aren't you also interacting with the audience? And, you know, given that you're trying to prompt, I assume, the audience response, is that right? And how does that affect how the play goes out? Are they all kind of the same, or do things vary depending on the audience reaction?
Well, I mean, certainly, right? You know, sometimes if you try to play up a joke, it doesn't become very funny, right? Yeah. So, of course, you know, as performers, we perform for our audiences and we give that to them, right? So the hope is that what we do and how we present it, that it's funny, and we take it so seriously in what we do that that's what makes it funny, right? Yeah, yeah. So we don't try to upplay the funny. We just do, right? Boyito and Verdi made this masterpiece, mm-hmm. and we go, okay, how can we take this masterpiece and do it, right? And do it so well that it's just some of the most funniest stuff you've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it definitely, audiences, they do affect. They do affect the kind of flow and how it goes. You go, okay, all right, maybe. Okay, they didn't laugh at that like the other audience did. Let's see what's happening here. Let's see how we can adjust and do make things a little bit differently to get a good flow for our audience. So, yeah, right. It definitely takes a factor.
So it does change over time, I would assume, the performance. Yeah, if you do it multiple times, do you kind of fashion it for the audience that you're playing? I mean, if you do the opera, say, three times, by the time you get to the third one, is it changed at all in the way you perform it? I mean, I'm just curious.
Well, you know, I think that we try to stay consistent for each other, right? Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure that we're constantly staying consistent. And so our audience will change, but you never know, right, who's out there and what's going on, right?
Sure.
So we're not trying to change that too much as we go. But we, of course, things evolve, right? The more and more you do it, you learn something new about yourself. You learn something new about the character. And things, I wouldn't say they change, but they shift.
Shift a little, sure.
Right? Things definitely shift. I go, ooh, I think I might like this. What do you think, Jim?
yeah,
what do you think, Emily? You like this, you know, right? Yeah. And so things might shift in those ways, yeah.
Right. So, Jim, back to you. That's a perfect segue. Is there a difference in doing in this intimate setting that you have here at VCA? Mm-hmm. Is there a way that you present and the way that, I mean, perhaps would you have to pause for laughter or?
There are certainly moments where you have to pause. And there are moments in the score where there is silence and a little bit of freedom to do that, where the orchestra's not playing and they'll wait for me to go on. So yeah, we will wait in certain spots for sure. I think the biggest difference performing in an intimate setting like the VCA is, you know, we have no fly system like many theaters sure. would, because VCA, of course, is a multi-use space. Right. And the weekend before Falstaff, there's a dog show.
Okay.
Which is great. I mean, I actually love that about Vashon, that, you know, it's, I don't know, I've seen the old stickers, keep Vashon weird, you know.
Yeah.
It's that, in that spirit, that we sort of embrace these things and come up with lots of unique approaches, you know.
I've told this story before, but I saw Something Rotten in New York, and I think it was even during the previews or whatever the mm-hmm. what do they call them, and they were in the very first act. There's a big production number, huge production number, and at the end of that, they got a standing ovation. I mean, in the middle of the play. And all the actors are looking at each other like, what now? What do we do now? But I thought, you know, I that made me think about it. It must be different with a different, you know, audience mm-hmm. doing that. Let's see, what else have I got here? Oh, I have to get the right page.
Without giving too much away, could you talk a little bit about the staging?
Oh, yeah.
Because there's lots of options. I mean, you could have done anything.
Right.
So could you talk a little bit about that? And then you as sort of performers, how does that staging sort of decision affect decisions you make about inhabiting your character?
Yeah, there's some definite unique choices made in this production. Yeah, some of you may have seen the Beachcomber article on this, but we're setting our production in 1970s era Las Vegas. So the Merry Wives of Windsor. The Windsor is a casino hotel in Vegas, and then Falstaff, as a fallen knight, he's sort of a kind of unsuccessful Elvis impersonator. And let me tell you, Josh has the Elvis moves down. I mean, we were rolling on the floor in rehearsal watching him perform this one scene. Maybe you all could talk about the takes on your character.
Well, in any era, Alice Ford is a modern woman. Mm-hmm. And it was funny that you mentioned it's Bea Arthur's birthday, because yeah. I think the show creator of the Golden Girls had read Shakespeare.
Exactly.
There's Major Sophia, Blanche, Dorothy, and Rose
totally.
Vibes going on with these girls.
Thank you for being a friend.
Picture it. Vegas, yeah, 1973.
There you go. I love it.
Oh, but the setting gives Alice so much freedom to be a modern woman. And taking it out of Shakespeare, although the jokes at that time were plenty insinuating and dirty to them, mm-hmm. we get to bring all of that to give it a great immediacy for mm-hmm. today's audiences, and the references and the jokes will be very apparent, I think. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's one thing that I noticed. I've seen a lot of Shakespeare over the years. I mean, we started going to Ashland in 1979, so I've been doing it a long time. And one of the things that fascinated me was that if you read Shakespeare, you know, you don't get some of the jokes or some of the innuendo. But when you see it played, you go, oh, that's what he's talking about.
It's very irreverent.
Yeah, very, very. And I can see that the opera then takes that same irreverence and presents it only in operatic form. Mm-hmm. That is fascinating. So you were talking about your rehearsals. Now, there are a fairly large number of local people also performing?
Yeah, we have of course a lot of locals in the cast. Many of them are singers that are kind of spread all over the Puget Sound area, Seattle and Tacoma. Mm-hmm. And actually our artistic director Allison Pohl is mm-hmm. in the cast as well this time.
Okay.
So yes, she's coming back to the stage. And we have some favorites, some favorite local singers that, you know, Brendan Tui has been in many of our shows, and Jose Rubio has been in many of our shows as well. And we also have some locals making their debut. Simon Peterson, our Dr. Cayuse, is singing with us for the first time. And I'm sure I'm leaving some people out because I didn't plan on going through the cast.
No, that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah. And of course, our wonderful chorus are all locals to Vashon. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And led by the amazing Peter Dorman, who has done a great job preparing them. So
in our rehearsal pianist too.
Oh, right? Yeah, also making her first debut with the company, Jessica Taylor, fantastic pianist who lives in Tacoma, and we've just been really blessed to have her. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that brings you to how much rehearsal do you actually get to accomplish? I mean, it seems to be like, how long have you folks been here?
A week.
Just a week.
Yeah, we've been here a week.
Yeah, you've already been here a week. Okay, yeah. So there was a kind of the initial gear up last week was geared towards the radio appearance that you mentioned earlier on King FM. Mm-hmm. Many of the cast members performed at the studios at Seattle Opera Facility Friday of last week. So that was kind of the first kind of rush preparation, because that was going live, you know. But we did sort of plunge in headlong into blocking actually only Saturday.
Wow.
So yeah, wow. And we blocked all of Act One, or almost all of Act One, on Saturday alone, and we've been going every day since. So.
So this gets me back to, obviously, you have to prepare at home, not here, in learning the part and learning the music.
Oh, yeah.
So how long does that take? I mean, is this a long process or?
Well, you know, the Falstaff is very wordy.
Right. Yeah.
It's a lot of words. For me, I'm a quick study. So I've done this opera before. I've done Falstaff before in school. Mm-hmm. Over 12 years ago.
Oh, wow.
12 years ago. And I did that as a student, right? And this is one of the biggest, most robust baritone roles in the repertoire,
sure,
right?
Sure.
And I had to learn it fast because my teacher, at the time I was at Indiana University, Tim Noble, was actually supposed to be singing it. Then he had back surgery, and I was supposed to be singing forward. And then the dean comes to me and says, hey, we need you to sing this.
Oh,
yeah.
My gosh.
So I had to learn it in 3 weeks.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, which is insane.
Yeah.
But to come back to it, and I, open my score, and I see all of my notes as a young 20-something-year-old student. I was like, oh, my gosh.
Oh,
this is
awesome.
Hilarious. Just like, okay, Josh, don't push here. Take your time.
Take your time.
All this stuff. Clearly, I was horrified.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. Indeed.
And, I think, typically for title role, big stuff like this, I like to take 6 months with it.
Wow.
Yeah. I really like to, I can learn. Clearly, I can learn it in 3 weeks.
Obviously,
right?
Yeah.
But I like to sit, really sit with it, really look at the text, speak it through, think about how I want to perform it
and what you're actually saying.
Exactly, and what I'm saying, mm-hmm. what I'm doing. Right. And I like to sit with that for like a month or two before I even start singing, right? And then I go through the process of learning it. Stuff like that. Now that I'm a professor, I have to quicken that up a little bit,
because
I'm busy, busier than ever. But that's usually my process with a big role like this. And so I try to take my time and really get an understanding of what I'm doing and what I'm saying, and kind of who I want to be on stage,
exactly.
Right? And then I incorporate all of the training I've done all my life in singing to it.
So that brings up a point. I've heard these some roles where, some of the plays that I've seen, the unbelievable amount of dialogue. I mean, the dialogue is just amazing. Mm-hmm. And I think, how in the world could they learn all of that dialogue? And my question is,
by the grace of God,
yeah, indeed. but do you find it easier if you have it set to music? Does that make a difference?
For me, absolutely. Sometimes I look at the actors and I go, wow, I don't know if I can just, every time I do a show with dialogue, I've done I've done like 3 different versions of the Fledermaus.
Mm-hmm.
And that dialogue, I've done it once in German, once in English. And I'm just like, oh, God,
can't even imagine.
Know, right. But, I guess music lives in us, and I'm intrinsically, lead in music.
Mm-hmm.
So. Mm-hmm. The way my brain's worked, if you sing something at me, it's in my brain right? So music helps me in ways that I don't think I can even imagine. Right. So yeah, it's definitely easier for me to have that, the music and those cues to go, what's next? But then also the staging helps you memorize too.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So now when you put things into action, so what I do in my practice time, I go, okay, I would want to do this and this or this with my body. And then we get in there in the staging and then it's like, go left, do this, do a twirl, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then you go, okay, that's, I know at this lyric moment, in the music, I have to do these three things. And then it goes, what are those words? And it just pops in your brain. So the whole process really helps you solidify the words.
Rather
the
than just sitting there reading or trying to exactly. You know, that makes a lot of sense.
Of course, when you first start the staging, you immediately forget all of the words. While you're trying to, it's like walking and chewing gum at the same time. And you just sort of, I will say it's, I just decided to start speaking in tongues in that particular
that particular spot.
And this opera in particular, because it's Shakespearean, Boito, he made up some Italian because he like there wasn't an Italian word equivalent of the Shakespeare, and right. So you know when you're first learning it and you're going, I've never seen this word before, and you try to look it up, it's like, yeah, because it doesn't exist.
Oh, really?
And so and I first performed this before there were a wide use of super titles, right. And so we did it in English, and so for me it was I compare it to covering up oil paint with watercolors, because if you've learned it in English, the English is always going to be first in your
mind.
First
in your brain, yeah.
And then for me, because I'm not a native Italian speaker, I think the meaning of the word before the word. And so sometimes when it goes by really quickly, sometimes you're like, what just came out of my mouth? I'm not entirely sure.
Well,
so
sure, whether
it's like
English,
I think
or...
I just ordered a pizza. I'm not entirely sure, but it's such a beautiful language, and you again you realize Boito was just as really? I just saw Mary Wives of Windsor, the play, for the first time last summer.
Oh, really?
And I was like, man, the way he managed to take that and turn it into this piece was just. He was thinking just on a whole different level. It was amazing.
So, quite obviously, the opera is done in Italian.
Yes.
Yeah.
See.
Kevin.
I actually heard that Shakespeare invented a lot of words.
He did. Mm-hmm. He did.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So Boito followed in that tradition.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. In fact, I have a book that's called, I think it's called Sharpen Up Your Shakespeare.
Brush Up Your Shakespeare. Yeah.
Yeah. And where they go through and talk about all the words that Shakespeare made up that we use every day or sayings that we, you know, oh, he's a piece of work, Shakespeare, you know, that sort of thing. Marie, how about you? Now, you're an Italian, have Italian background. Do you speak Italian?
Yes, I am a native Italian speaker. I'm an Italian dual citizen as well. I can tell you, Emily did order a couple of pizzas during the rehearsal last night, and we do not condone ham and pineapple.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. So how is this for you then? Is it more natural or...
It's been really cool. I'm so happy that probably the most text-heavy role I've ever done is in one of my native languages. Mm. But it still is challenging to... maybe sometimes my desire to express all of the words idiomatically takes over.
Oh.
And you do have to be... You know, Verdi sets the words so perfectly to the music that he really tells you the expression that's in every phrase.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in his dramatic operas, in his tragedies, the emotions are stretched out over time. And in comedy, all of the feelings and thoughts go by in real time and sometimes faster than real time.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's been very cool to explore. And it's also been fun to come up with reasons for why there are sometimes pauses.
Mm-hmm.
Why does the music slow down? Because those moments are few and far between. So what was he creating there?
Mm-hmm.
And it was in my preparation, I came up with some ideas of what I thought might be the reason. And then despite our very quick rehearsal process, there has been time to play and try out other reasons why these silences or pauses or slower moments exist, and what was Verdi getting at there?
And the emotion or the facial expression that you share based on that, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, now for you non-Italian speakers, how difficult is it to learn the the text in Italian? I mean, is this really difficult, or?
Thank God for school.
Yeah.
You know, all of us, and not the majority of us, we go to school for this, right? So, and a part of the curriculum in most cases is that we take language. Mm. Not only just like taking the language, we also take diction as well. Mm-hmm. So,
well, it's the pronunciation.
Yeah,
the
pronunciation of the words, and then also taking the language sometimes for a whole year, sometimes for a semester, or things like that. So, we become somewhat versed in having those kinds of skills, and then if you wanted to pursue that even further, you can. Right. So I took a year of Italian and then also diction. But most of mine was in German. So I did 3 years of German. I don't even sing in German. I haven't made a career in German at all.
Well,
you know, I figured I was going to go to Germany and have a career there and all that. And then I was like, I got married, and I was like, I'm never leaving America. What am I talking about? And so I took all this German.
Well, but have you done any German operas, though?
I mean, only one.
Really?
In my whole career. Ariadne auf Naxos.
Oh, that's a great one.
Yeah. Did the music lead. And talk about a lot of words.
I can imagine.
So
Bruce.
Yeah, let me ask you about the 70s in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. That's all about bling, right?
Uh-huh.
You know, and so who's designing the costumes? Mm. How is that working in terms of the staging? And how is it affecting each of you as a character in terms of your costumes and that sort of blingy, you know, sort of Elvis 70s Las Vegas?
Right. I mean, so the concept kind of evolved out of, you know, well, I had seen a couple of productions in Italy last year at La Scala and also at La Fenice in Venice. Correspondingly, it was Don Pasquale of Donizetti and then Bajazet of Vivaldi, which is a pastiche opera. But they were both very modern productions. And what it made me realize, well, the Don Pasquale especially was a fantastic production where it was a kind of retrospective of Italian cinema, and the opening of Act Two where Ernesto he's in a train station, he's leaving for a faraway land, and there are all these, it's sort of middle of the night in a train station, and there are all these Fellini-esque characters wandering through the stage. And it made me realize, like, okay, now in America, what would be a sort of, you know, very vibrant visual thing? And the first thing that popped up was the Elvis impersonator. And then that immediately brought me to Vegas. And then there's a wedding, sort of a double wedding at the end of the opera. And I thought, well, a Vegas wedding, perfect, you know.
Perfect.
And
yeah.
So all this came together. So anyway, our costume designer, to get to your main question, is Jocelyn Fowler, who is who's director of production at Seattle Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. And she's put together some really fun outfits, and the singers can talk more about that. They had a hat fitting.
I have the Elvis hair.
Do you really?
Oh, I'm excited.
Joy Stegenfelter, our wonderful wig master, has this amazing collection, and yeah, they had wig fittings the other day too.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm.
Well, I've said already that as soon as I put on the costume, I realized I was playing my grandmother.
Your grandmother, yeah.
But also, you know, the colors are so vibrant, and I have to say, the first costume is a bathing suit. It's a bathing suit.
Yeah. Well.
So I was kind of scared to put it on and realize I would be on stage in a bathing suit.
Yeah.
But Jocelyn does such a good job of making you feel incredible, and as soon as I put that outfit on, I just thought, rear. And I just, like, it's going to be so much fun, and there's so much freedom in just feeling so, I guess, liberated in that particular costume and in this color scheme, and everything is vibrant, and these women are on vacation. They're running around by the pool.
That's awesome.
So we originally, Mrs. Quickly was going to be like Mrs. Roper from Three's Company.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then we had a conversation. I said, well, you know, she's not really, she's not in sort of the same social class as these Merry Wives. And so we've arrived on, she's a cocktail waitress at the casino.
Ah.
So I haven't seen what the new, what the revamped with emphasis on vamp is going to be, but I'm looking forward to see what Jocelyn comes up with.
We're going with a much sexier quickly than one is used to seeing on stage. So.
good. You know, again, like I said, I've seen a lot of Shakespeare, and one of the things that they do what you folks have done and brought it to the modern era. And, you know, like, for example, West Side Story, you know, Romeo and Juliet. So I've seen them do that. And I'm wondering, is that, how does that change the way you approach the character? Does that change the way you...
Good comedy, good theater can be in any time
any
period.
Era.
It always works. And sometimes I don't think it takes people out of the atmosphere that was intended. Mm-hmm. I think as long as it's thought all the way through, as long as it's not just we're going to smack this concept down on this and see what happens. Right. But Jim has thought this all the way through. Mr. Ford runs a laundromat. So if you're familiar with the plot line, you know, there's a laundry basket that features very heavily in the plot.
It does.
And it's like, and we actually have a laundromat for the laundry. It's like,
perfect.
Oh, my gosh.
Perfect.
So as long as the concept is thought all the way through, I think that it doesn't take you out of the story at all. I think, and it can also sort of be the icing on the cake. As long as the cake is there, then you can put any kind of icing on it.
Yeah.
And I think that people will get a kick. It's one of those things, the more you know Shakespeare, the funnier it actually is. Or
absolutely.
The more you know this opera, the funnier it is, because you're adding this sort of, what if we look at it from this perspective? And it's like,
perfect.
Still funny, but funny for like maybe even some additional reasons.
Exactly. I was thinking, you know, I can see some really hilarious twists coming on that from modern.
Yeah, we've been talking about how, you know, Shakespeare was so funny and irreverent. And for better or worse, he expected his audience to see themselves
exactly.
in these characters. And by the same token, Verdi's tunes were sung in the streets of Italy as popular music.
Mm-hmm.
So doing this in a way that we'll all recognize is extremely true to the intention of both the original play and the opera.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Some of us remember the 70s. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Some of us do, yes. Quite well, actually. Yeah. No, this has been really fascinating for me, and I have to remind folks one more time that Falstaff will be presented by Vachon Opera at Vachon Center for the Arts on Friday, May 23rd at 7:30, and on Sunday, May 25th at 2:30 p.m. as a matinee, and tickets are available at both the VachonOpera.org and also at the Vachon Center for the Arts.org. And I can tell you that I already have my tickets. And
oh, great.
Yes. Wonderful.
You bet. I'm ready. I can hardly wait. You know, I've told this before that I was never really a big opera buff. You know, my wife, on the other hand, very, very much so. Mm. And so the reason for going to the Met was her Christmas present. And I said, you know, you've always wanted to go to the Met, so let's go.
Wow.
Holy cow. I think I became an opera buff.
Oh, you know? good. Yeah.
It that was such an amazing performance. And then when we saw Otello here, I was, again, really, really impressed. Bruce, did you get to see it, the opera here? Well, I highly recommend it. How about you, Kevin? Did you get to go to Otello? Or?
No. I think we're out.
You were out boating. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. You were up Nanaimo or somewhere at that
one
point.
One of the consequences of being a boat owner.
Exactly. Well, if we got a couple more minutes here. Bruce?
Let me ask you, Jim. You've done two of Verdi's Shakespeare's. How about Macbeth? Is that on the radar?
Ah, well.
I'd like to invite everyone to show up personally at Jim's home.
Yes,
I'll give
yes.
you the address afterward.
Yes, yeah.
Tweet, post on social media,
yes.
call your state senator, talk to them about something more important than my opera career, but do also let them know that you would like to see me as Lady Macbeth with Vachon
all right.
Opera.
All right.
Yes.
All
yes. Right. Yeah, we definitely like have two votes in the room, for sure.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Me too. Come on, Macbeth.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I can't even imagine Macbeth as an opera, actually. I mean, I guess I can.
It's a great opera. Verdi did a great job with it. Yeah.
I'd be interested.
So maybe so.
Well, they'd never say never.
The seed
right?
has been planted. Yeah.
That's great. So speaking of that, so you, all of Verdi's plays or operas obviously are in Italian. Are you folks going to be working on any other languages plays or operas or anything in the works for you?
Well, I'm doing another Shakespeare infused production. I'm directing a Kiss Me Kate this fall. So that's, you know, about as far from Italian as you can get.
Indeed.
Well, but it's like you said, it's everywhere. Even if you don't realize, it's like Shakespeare is everywhere.
Everywhere. Mm-hmm. So that is a question for you. What's next? What's next for each of you? How about you, Jim? What's next for you?
Well, the week after Falstaff, I'm actually taking my mother to Italy, who's never been to Europe. And she turned 80 last month. And my sister and I talked to her and said, well, would you like to go to Europe? And she said, oh, yeah, that would be so much fun. And so we're going to Italy. That's as far as the big event in my life. That's the next thing. But as far as the next opera, of course, it's Cendrillon or Cinderella here at Vachon Opera in September. So,
okay. Oh, in September. It's that soon.
It's that soon. Yeah.
Oh
yeah. So that, it's definitely coming up. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Gosh. How about you, Emily? What's up next for you?
Well, this Kiss Me, Kate. And I'm also doing an opera out, I can't say the name of the vineyard, but a vineyard outside Portland in July.
Oh, really?
And it's an opera called The Dream, where there's a lot of wine being consumed. So it's like, it should have been done in a vineyard all along.
Exactly.
But looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Josh?
Okay, well, this summer and next year, I'm like stepping into my big boy pants.
Yes.
So after Falstaff, you know, I'm a teacher, so I'll be teaching in Sewanee, Tennessee, with the Sewanee Music Festival. Right after that, I'm doing another title role, Verdi, one of Verdi's big three, Rigoletto, in August.
Wow.
Then followed right back in September with a Pagliacci, singing Donio and Pagliacci.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Why don't you just step into something easy?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, really. Yeah. Real hard 3 months.
No kidding.
Yeah. Then, you know, I'm doing some stuff at the school. I have a Ein Deutsches Requiem, so the German Requiem by Brahms, in German. Mm-hmm. What else do I have? I also am doing my first Elijah, Mendelssohn's Elijah, in
beautiful.
English.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to it.
So you're teaching, obviously. Do you folks do productions at the school as
we
well?
We do.
Then?
We do productions at the school. You know, They make sure the opera department make sure to keep the teachers out of it, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You know? So, right. Well, we don't get a say. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we coach them up. That we haven't announced our operas yet, but hopefully we will do that soon. Yeah.
All right. How about you, Marie?
Well, my next engagement is actually stepping into my life's dream role for the first time. I will be understudying the title role of Turandot.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Wow.
And I actually get to work with my husband in that production in Tel Aviv, Israel, at the Israeli Opera. So we're very excited about that. And then the next thing I'll do is a full ring cycle at the Wagner in Vermont Festival.
Wow.
I'm a Rhine maiden and a Valkyrie, so I really enjoy this journey of being a member of
turf,
a girl
baby.
Gang.
Serpent turf.
Wow.
Yeah, I love being in these like cool packs of women in operas.
Yeah,
it really
obviously.
Like creates so much freedom and such a great energy, and it's very different than a role where you just stand alone on stage and sing your arias. I love the collaboration and the community spirit of all working together in these scenes. So I'm really looking forward to that.
It should be incredibly exciting to do. I remember I was a high school, as Bruce was, a band member, you know. And it was so delightful to be with that group of people and have that energy. And, you know, so I can see that as...
And, you know, as a director, that high school band experience has come in very, very handy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When you have large groups of people that you have to organize. I was drum major for 2 years. And
oh,
so
yeah.
It was like, Oh, I never thought I would use those life skills, but here we are.
You know, in a Texas band.
Yeah, Texas band.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Big band. Oh, man, that's big. That's big. Friday night lights.
Friday night lights.
There you go. Well, folks, hey, I cannot tell you how much I've enjoyed having you here, and I'm sure we can all say that we hope you all break legs or whatever you say to opera performers, but we're very much looking forward to the production, and we really, really, really thank you for coming in and sharing this time with us. It's been delightful.
Thank you.
What a pleasure.
And well, I guess we'll expect to see you on the stage in about 2 weeks. Once again, May 23rd, 7:30 p.m. That's Friday. Sunday, May 25th at 2:30. It is Falstaff. It's at the Vashon Center for the Arts. And I recommend everyone on Vashon and in the city come out to see it. So for Bruce, Kevin, Craig, and Amy, who are not here today, I'm Truman. We're signing off for now. And we will see you all next week. Thanks again for tuning in.